All right, everyone, welcome to the real episode 30 of Fundamentally Sound. As always, your guys Reeks from Barstool Sports and Ben Brust. We tried doing episode 30 at Queen City Exchange on Sunday. It didn't work out great.
That's why we tried, because we needed to try.
So it worked out great if you were at Queen City Exchange, because the sound was very clear there. But apparently, we had some people ask, like, hey, what's going on with that trial, you know, that mini episode you guys did. Essentially, I didn't record. Like, you could only hear Ben. There's a lot of feedback, and you couldn't hear me. We're working on, you know, getting the kinks out for the live show on the 27th down at Queen City. So that's why nothing posted on Sunday. It was a good show, though. We'll say that. So you should come, because it's going to be even better on Friday, October 27th. So that's what happened there. So this is the real episode 30. And I'm kind of mad I said this on Sunday, because your reaction was perfect. This is this is Tony Rutland is my number 30 here.
I'll give you the same reaction. You're just out of your mind.
Yeah. He played in the mid-90s for Wake Forest. You should love him, because he was one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the ACC. Like, he's a career 38% three-point shooter.
You know what? You'll actually like the 80s?
What was that you cut out? Right, what did you say right before the 80s?
Yeah, do you have your, like, Wake Forest knowledge back to the 80s?
To a degree.
What about Craig Dawson?
Craig Dawson was that – did he weren't – wait, who's the Dawson that – that's not the guy that wore number four, was it?
I think he was, like, their all-time leading three-point shooter.
Yeah, he wasn't in the 80s. He was in the 2000s.
I don't know when he was, but all I know is I played in a 3-on-3 tournament with him, and he could still shoot the piss out of it.
So I went to camp at Wake Forest back in the day, and he was my coach there, and he loved it because I played out of my mind that year. But he wore number four, and he was in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just letting you know, just in case, you know, I know how you get all excited over Wake Forest people.
Dude, I love Wake Forest. So
this is the, as someone who really enjoyed this basketball player before he went viral in the NBA.
Julius Randle.
No, Steph Curry. Steph Curry, to me.
Who?
Steph Curry. Bob McKillop sent me, like, tape or whatever to watch Curry and just watch their offense. And I was like, what? They let him do this? They let, like, just, like, some of the shots he was taking and making was just so fun to watch.
So the real viral guy that should be getting more love is Seth Curry, which is who I think you should be talking about.
Why?
Not Steph Curry. It's Seth Curry.
What am I missing here?
Nothing. They just both wear number 30.
Just a terrible Steph and Seth joke.
Exactly. Getting you all messed up. So this is going to be our SEC preview. We have on our guy Aaron Torres. He writes for KSR. He used to write for Fox. He writes for The Athletic. You've heard him on Fox Radio. You hear him all over. Really good dude. We picked him for the SEC because he was the author of One in Fun, which, even if you're not a Kentucky fan, if you just like, you know, college basketball in general and kind of the world that we live in with, and something we talked about in the world we live in with the one and done era, it's a really good book to read. Talking about Calipari and his early team there at Kentucky. So it's a great interview. We recorded it before we recorded this, and I think you guys will enjoy it. We touch on everything from SEC projections to the Ball family to Adam Silver's comments.
Can't escape him.
Yeah, so it's – oh, and not to mention we also record and find out live while we're all watching Gordon Hayward ankle turn the wrong way.
I watched it live, and I'm not going to lie. I think for like a good 5 minutes I was shooken up.
Yeah, it was
– I'm literally scared to play basketball again after watching that.
I'm supposed to play tomorrow, and I might just cancel.
No, like play – don't leave your feet. Just literally below the rim on the ground. Right.
I've had zero ankle injuries my entire life, and after watching that, I'm convinced tomorrow, like, both my ankles are just going to snap in half.
I mean, I'm still shooken up. Let's just get to the interview.
So, yeah, you listen to the interview, you'll know when the injury happens because we all kind of, like, yelp. But, again, Aaron Torres, great interview, definitely worth checking out. After the interview, stick around. We have the results from our fantasy basketball league draft entries. So shout out everybody for doing that. So interview with Aaron Torres afterward, results of the fantasy. So here we go. All right, now we welcome on, as we mentioned, Aaron Torres, who you can hear kind of all over. You can hear him on – he makes appearances on Fox Radio. He writes for KSR. He writes for The Athletic. He's the author of One in Fun. You can follow him on Twitter at @Aaron_Torres. Aaron, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. As I was telling you guys, I hope I'm not totally killing the moment here by talking about times of recording, but I just flipped on the TV. The Cavs are playing with Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose, and I almost went into toxic shock when I saw that. But otherwise, I'm well. I hope you guys are as well, and thank you as always for having me, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. So obviously, we're doing the SEC preview, as everyone knows. Aaron's a great guy to bring in for the SEC. Obviously, you wrote about a Kentucky team. You've been one of the more bold statements with the SEC. You've been high on them for like well before, you know, preview season started, about how this team's going or how this conference is going. With the influx of talent, is this a trend going forward, or do you think this is just a 2017-18 season thing?
Yeah, it's funny. I think, probably the first person on this, and it dates back to, basically right after the Final Four, as I started kind of projecting out what this 2017-2018 season would look like. I think it's an upward trend. You know, look, I think the idea that Missouri is always going to have a Michael Porter on their roster going forward obviously isn't going to happen. Same with Alabama and Colin Sexton. But, you know, the one thing I'll say about the SEC is this, is that, you know, credit to many years ago when the SEC Network launched, Mike Slive, who was the, I guess, commissioner at the time, really – and it was a kind of one of his last things that he commissioned. He basically went to these schools and said, like, look, you know, we have been – winter time after football season is done, and we need you guys to step your game up. And so from there, I think it started with the coaches getting a Ben Howland to Mississippi State, getting Avery Johnson. I love using that as a trivia question at the bar. Like, you know, Alabama has a coach that was once NBA Coach of the Year, which is kind of insane to think about. Like, it's something that I don't think people realize, but it shows kind of the commitment that these schools have made. Obviously, Bruce Pearl at Auburn. I think you could even say Rick Barnes, despite how things ended at Texas, you know, was an upgrade. Well, he was certainly an upgrade over they had, but, like, you know, still a really kind of good coach historically. So I think that it all starts with the coaches. I think this is an upward trend. Obviously, are they going to get to two teams to a Final Four like last year every year? Of course not. Are they going to have potentially the number one pick in the draft every year like Michael Porter this year? Obviously not. But I do think it's definitely a step in the right direction and a sign of things to come in that conference.
Where do you think they rank in terms of, like, other of the power, let's say the power six conferences? Where would you put them in the last 5 years as a rank?
Well, the last 5 years, I mean, it hasn't been pretty, and I don't know all the stats off the top of my head, but it hasn't been pretty, you know. But I mean, look, I live here in LA, and let's be honest, even though the Pac-12 has had great teams during the regular season, they've struggled to get teams to that Final Four. Oregon was the first one since UCLA, ironically, with Ben Holland, who's now in the SEC. So the Big 12 has had trouble getting teams to that final weekend. So it all depends on kind of how you feel about how you go ahead about ranking your conferences. I think in terms of the Power 5, Power 6, they're probably towards the bottom, but I do feel like they're trending upward. And like I said, I think it's because of teams that are going to be interesting across the league, even pretty much any given night. It's going to be actually really fun
and interesting to see how all these things shake out because there is so much balance across the board in the league.
Yeah, so with that, I mean, do you think – obviously everyone's gunning for Kentucky. This is Kentucky's league. Is it still Kentucky's league? Is it always going to be Kentucky's league until Cal goes or goes away? Or, you know, do you think maybe Mike White – I mean, he's starting to recruit better. He's getting his guys in. We've already seen what he's getting in for next year, you know, a couple guards. Do you think maybe Florida can be, you know, back to what Florida was, you know, towards, you know, the end of or the middle of Donovan's run there where, yeah, Florida's, you know, 1A and 1B with Kentucky? Or is it just – it's Kentucky and then everyone else year after year?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of just how Calipari recruits, I mean, they're always going to be kind of the team that everyone has their eye on coming into the season because, you know, as long as the one and done is in play, which is something I know we'll probably talk about at some point, like he's always going to get those top high school players. I think Mike White is a really interesting kind of character because, you know, when Billy Donovan leaves, I mean, we're talking about four Final Fours, two national championships. This was a guy that literally did things at Florida that had never even been fathomed before he got there. And I really thought that, okay, there's no way you can replace this guy. And especially if you remember, by the way, that it happened kind of like in the process, OKC kind of fired their coach late in the spring and he went. Yeah. And like the thing was like nobody knew anything about Mike White. I mean, he hadn't made an NCAA tournament at Louisiana Tech. And here he is 2 years later with, you know, with Florida going to one game from the Final Four last year. The other team, by the way, that I think is really interesting going forward is Vanderbilt. You know, Bryce Drew, in a very short time, one, they obviously got to the tournament last year. They had that heartbreaking loss to Northwestern. But I mean, and I was going to say, like, if you look at the way he's recruiting
Darius Garland, like that just doesn't happen.
Exactly. And I think that he's kind of using that profile, not to the degree that Duke has, but like, look, Duke says to kids like, hey, come here for a year. You know, we hope you're out in a year, but you're going to be, you know, one, you're going to get credits towards a degree. You can always come back. And then if you're here for 2 or 3 years and you're going to leave with a degree from one of the best schools in the country. And I think that's a pitch that Bryce Drew is going to start using more going forward. And I think that could be a very unique thing for Vanderbilt. You just hit the nail on the head, Bobby, as far as like, you know, just the idea that they're already, he hasn't even brought in a full class yet, or I guess he has brought in one, but they're already kind of getting guys to at least come in for visits that they would have never gotten in years past.
Yeah. That's the crazy thing to me. And you know, he was a great coach at Valpo. He has the kind of family lineage of Homer Drew, his father being a well-known and well-respected coach of Valpo.
The iconic shot as well.
Yeah, the iconic shot that, I mean, we're all around the same age. I think every single one of us practiced that at, like, you know, what was that, 90, 99, 98 when that shot went in? So it's like.
And then every high school coach around America has that as their last second play.
Oh, yeah. And it never works. It's like the pass just gets intercepted or just
– that play never works.
Well, I was going to say the funny thing is I think I remember Bryce Drew even saying like that play never worked when they ran it in practice, which was made it that much more funny when it came through. But, yes, I remember where I was and practicing that awkward fall away / awkward dive into the ground.
And was Mike White on that Ole Miss team?
I forgot about that. I believe he was, yeah.
Because they're right around the same age. I don't know. I bet he was. I mean, that. Could you imagine, like, just – I hope – just because I love being assholes, I hope that Bryce Drew, like, walks through the handshake line. It's just like, hey, remember the NCAA tournament? It just, like, reminds him, like, generically. I would love if that story came out.
I'm sure it has. I'm sure it will at some point.
So, you know, one thing I want to go back to, and you touched on it, and you have to talk about it with this conference because of the way Calipari recruits, the way that Quanzo Martin recruits with him now in there, and you know, even Hal Lynch tried to get one-and-dones. Vanderbilt's obviously trying to get one-and-dones for next year's class or, you know, what guys assume to be one-and-done. You know, and it's going to happen. It's just the way college basketball is. And that's the comments Adam Silver made about the one and done being done or going away before the 2024 CBA is up. And I know we quickly touched about this off air, and I read your tweets and kind of your thoughts on it. And we agree that it is the right idea, but the wrong way that he talked about it, if I'm assuming correctly.
Yeah, my only thing is, and this dates back to a few months ago when he went out with Colin Cowherd, is that, you know, look, it's clear that what, first of all, you know, to be clear, he's the commissioner of the NBA. He has to do what he believes is best for the NBA. This was a rule that was put in by the previous commissioner in the NBA, by the way, as you, the three of us know. I don't think the average fan necessarily knows it. It's not a college rule. It's an NBA rule. And he has to govern his league the best that he wants. You know, my problem is that he just goes out there and just makes stuff up as far as why the rule needs to be changed. So in the springtime, it was, well, you know, these one and done kids, well, they don't go to class after the first semester, and that defeats the purpose. Well, excuse me, John Wall had the highest GPA at Kentucky. Brandon Knight, you know, had a 4.0 at Kentucky. Jahlil Okafor has come back to take classes at Duke in the summer. So a lot of these kids care. And then, you know, over the last couple of days, he's kind of made this argument of, you know, the NBA doesn't develop play, or the college game isn't really developing players the way that they need to be developed, this and that. And like, I get it. Like, there are plenty of examples of guys who struggle in the college game, come into the NBA and have success. But like, there's also a lot of guys who needed college to, you know, to develop, whether it, you know, one, it certainly helped the Carl Anthony Towns of the world that averaged 18 and 10. Obviously he could have gone to the NBA straight out of high school, but you can't tell me that year at Kentucky didn't develop. But then more realistically, you have the older, you know, you have the other guys that have turned into all-stars in large part because of how they were developed in college. I don't think anybody in the Warriors is taking credit for Steph Curry, you know, kind of, you know, being able to play the way that he does, or Klay Thompson or Draymond Green. You know, Russell Westbrook went for 2 years. Kawhi Leonard, you go on and on down the list. There's actually more really, really good players in the NBA, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, that needed that college experience. So my whole thing is, yes, did Kevin Durant need that 1 year at Texas? Of course not. And certainly, are there players who are helped by getting to the NBA earlier? Yeah, but like, I think that, you know, his comments are really kind of short-sighted, and I don't know. I think factually incorrect. That's what bothers me more than anything, is just the idea that just a lot of the stuff he says just like isn't true. And if you're gonna actual facts should at least be out, you know.
Okay, so Aaron, you obviously are watching this Boston game, and I have to talk about this. Did you guys just see what happened?
Yeah, Gordon Hayward's like dead.
Gordon Hayward's ankle is facing the wrong direction. That was one of the most awful things I've ever seen.
Yeah, like dudes are like down on their knees crying.
Oh, this is like Kevin Ware, isn't it? Oh my God.
Yeah, this is Paul George, Kevin Ware. This is really bad.
Wow, I saw him go down. And I thought it was like a I thought he got just tripped or hit his head or something, but now I'm seeing it. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I have this on my smaller TV, so I didn't see it like very clear at first. Yeah, that's – I'm going to throw up right now.
That – I can't even speak, dude. His foot was facing the complete wrong direction. Even LeBron's crying, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's bad. Well, nothing like recording a podcast like in the middle of just like one of the most gruesome injuries ever. On his first what? We're at the 5 minute mark, first seven minutes on a new team.
Holy!
Speaking of guys who developed in college too, as ironic as that is, Gordon Hayward.
See if he had just stayed in. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm not gonna joke, but.
But going back to what that is, and you know, I agree. Like, to me, I'm fine with the NBA getting rid of the one and done, because I'm all for just guys getting money when they can, especially because the majority comes from, you know, low income. Obviously, you know, not everybody does, but the majority of these high players are from, you know, low income families or something like that. And I want them to get their money as early as possible. But
it, you know, the sad part about it is the college game will hurt. Because at the end of the day, is that Kentucky 38-0 team, like, is that a thing? Is is the college basketball name that people – I loved watching Kevin Durant in college. I love watching the one-and-done players in college as much as I may not – you know, is the college game really going to suffer hard if they do take this rule away?
No, because – I mean, it'll suffer just because you lose the stars because, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, those guys are going to the NBA right away. But you still have – like, think back to the 90s when there wasn't – you know, when you could do whatever you wanted and – there still was the Tim Duncans of the world. There still was Christian Laettner. Like, there still was big names that were playing. Mecca Okafor. You know, there were guys. There's still going to be guys. Like, that's just how it is. But you will lose the big name factor for a year.
Well, and you guys hit on kind of an important point that this is one of my – first of all, I'm in – look, I totally get the argument for why we need to allow the top high school players to go. Every player has a shelf life, you know, the opportunity to earn millions. You know, it's a finite amount of time. I get all that. One, you know, I actually thought John Calipari brought up a great point, you know, probably about 3 or 4 months ago when this stuff first came out of like, you know, say what you want about the one and done, but it has forced kids at the high school level to take academics seriously, to go to class, to do what they – and, like, that's a good thing. I'm never against kids having to take school seriously because you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, my fear is I don't – you know, people say, oh, it's only going to be 5 or 10 kids a year. I think it's going to be a lot more than that because I'm around, you know, high school and grassroots basketball enough to know that there's a lot more than 5 or 10 kids that think they can play in the NBA right now in any given year. But I think that the point I wanted to make off of what you guys said, which I think is just so overlooked, is like, you know, the one thing that I just don't think Adam Silver appreciates at all is the value that the one season in college brings for NBA excitement. And I've said this many times and I will continue to say it, and I'll believe it long after they remove the one and done. The one and done, there are obviously pitfalls to it. We've seen with this FBI investigation, which, you know, it's not directly correlated to the one and done, but it pretty much is. But I always say this, is that the one and done has created more interest in college basketball, in the NBA draft, in NBA summer league, in AAU basketball, and in high school basketball. The good of the one and done has been so good for the business of basketball, it's unbelievable. I mean, maybe you guys feel differently, but I know that I pay a lot more attention to the high school game, even more now than I did when the best players could go to the NBA right out of high school, because I want to know who those guys are that are going to come to college and then go to the NBA. It creates interest in AAU tournaments. It creates interest, obviously, in college. And I've never seen in my life that I can remember, except maybe the year that LeBron came in, so much interest in the NBA draft as we've gotten in the last couple years. And you can sit here and say, how much impact does it really have? But I'm just like, dude, how many people outside of guys like the three of us that live, eat, sleep, and breathe college basketball knew who Lonzo Ball was at this time last year? Nobody. And so to me, like that's not a reason to keep the rule. Obviously, as you said, Riggs, you know, like it's bad for business to keep qualified, you know, kind of job applicants, for lack of a better term, from earning a living. But you cannot deny how much the one and done has helped all levels of basketball, including, yes, the NBA, just in terms of exposure, excitement, and really just frankly interest in the youth level of basketball.
I think a degree, but I also wonder, because we never got to see it, but how much like social media and the Wojes and the Shams and the Ball is Life mixtapes and all that stuff, and the fact that AAU is now broadcasted by ESPN is also playing that. Like, it's just an assumption, but I would like to see just 1 year of, you know,
that's fair. That's fair. But I would,
because that has, I'm assuming both play a major role in it, because obviously you're watching college basketball or you're watching ESPN or you're reading, you know, stories about the one and dones in college. But at the same time, like, we've never seen, you know, there's just easier to get news and easier to hear about stuff day in and day out today than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would just say that there's going to be more excitement from a Lakers fan for Lonzo Ball watching him play 30 games at UCLA than one trying to stream a Chino Hills game, or two trying to stream a Los Angeles Defenders game in the D League, which is ultimately where most of these guys are going to end up. And like, look, I get this is all part of it too, that you know, Adam Silver is kind of, you know, casually glossing over, is that his owners have invested, I don't know the number, but I would guess tens of millions of dollars into this D League, and they got to make it work. So that's all part of it too. But I don't know, man. It's a bummer as a college basketball fan, but also it's just a bummer of the way that Silver's approaching it. Because I just, like I said, I don't mind if he wants to change the rule, but he's just kind of making stuff up, and it kind of bothers me.
The one thing I didn't like in his statement, actually the biggest thing I didn't like in his statement was the line he had about Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz. We'll focus on Ben Simmons talking about SEC not making the NCAA tournament, and it should have been viewed as a negative. And it's like, well, he also played for Johnny Jones with an average roster that had Keith Hornsby hurt for most of the year.
Well, I like how he says that this is his exact quote. He says, the last two number one picks have gone to non-traditional powers. This is marking a sea of change in the end. Like, what are you talking about? Like, first of all, he says that it's a sea of change because the number one pick came from Washington, forgets to mention that the number 2, 3, 4, and 5 pick in last year's draft were Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, and De'Aaron Fox, which is UCLA, fucking, excuse my language, UCLA, Kentucky, Duke, and Kansas. It's about as blue blood as you get. But what kind of BS? This is a sea of change. You know, I just posted a column on KSR where I said, you know, saying that because Markel Fultz was the number one pick is a sea of change is like saying that Dirk Nowitzki has created a sea of change in the NBA, and now all of the best players are going to be 7-foot Germans that can shoot threes. Like, it's preposterous. Right. And it's the same with this stupid statement by him. So, yeah, you guys just got me fired up. I've been reading this stuff and writing about it all day, so you got me all pissed off. But listen, I love college basketball, and I'm going to enjoy these top freshmen as long as I can.
Yeah, I love a good rant, so that was perfect. I completely agree, though. I mean, For me personally, and Reed, you brought up a great point about the social media. With social media, with Ball is Life, with college basketball, this is the most I've ever really been into the whole high school recruiting thing. Obviously, when you play, you don't pay attention to that. But for me, like, as the casual basketball fan since I've been done, I've been trying to find ways to, like, engage in the social media. Like, my go-to-bed routine is – go to Ball's Life, go to House of Highlights, go to this, go to that, where you can check out who are the up and coming guys. I also, like I've mentioned this, and Riggs know this. That's one of my favorite shows.
Reeks probably knows this, but I've become a little bit of a Ball family apologist through the years, because I live in SoCal, and just through the high school grassroots AAU scene, I mean, I met LeVar Ball and that family probably when Lonzo was in like his junior year of high school. So I've known LeVar for 4 or 5 years, 3 years, whatever it is. And, you know, the person that you guys see in front of the camera is the exact same person that he is every single day, Monday through Sunday, from the moment he wakes up till the moment he goes to bed. He is a larger-than-life personality. And it's funny now because, obviously, you know, writing for KSR, a primary Kentucky website, like, you know, it's like, you know, the cool thing to do to bash the Balls. But I'm like, dude, if you watch that show – like, I think that America kind of gets to see what I've seen all along with that family, which is like, it just reminds me, it's just a super close family. They're way too into each other's business. They love each other. They argue like a family. I don't know. I get a kick out of them. And I think that show has spread a completely different light on that family for those that have taken the time to watch it. So I'm glad you're enjoying it, because I myself am enjoying it. I thought I might be the only person in America who was, but I'm enjoying it a lot.
No, dude, like, I haven't watched Sunday's episode, and I can't wait to just, like, sit down and enjoy it. Like, he definitely has his shtick. Like, his shtick is to be a little obnoxious on the camera, be loud, maybe ruffle some people's feathers, get under their skin. But at the end of the day, this is absolutely genius. I think it's genius. I've been on here, I think, early on before I started watching the show. I used to just be like, oh, he's a clown, or oh, he's like the Donald type, you know, like just kind of creating emotion. He's not. I really do think he's like calculated in a businessman. And also, like, his points he makes, they're not as outrageous as people make it out to be. They pick and choose the really bad quotes and then really blow them up. When he actually says some intelligent things, and despite some of his choices to take LaMelo out of school, who knows if that's a good decision, bad decision. I don't know. He's got one kid in the NBA so far, so I'm not going to say anything until it goes wrong.
Well, and a couple of real quick thoughts here. One, he is an incredibly savvy business guy. And the thing I don't think he gets enough credit for, all of this stuff has been planned out forever. And so, you know, everyone, when he releases a Lonzo Ball signature shoe for $500, everyone screams about the price and screams about, you know, this guy's a clown, whatever. It's like,
marketing plan.
But just think about how much has to go in to the concept of creating your own shoe, as if he rolled out of bed that morning and said, you know what, I want Lonzo to have his own shoe today, so let's make that happen. It's like, no, the guy, first of all, had to find a designer, you know, however, I don't even know how you go about designing a shoe. You have to set up a website to track sales. You have to find someone to you know, to not print them, but to manufacture them. You have to set up a website for consumer sales. They went to Slam Magazine and had them produce this extensive video. They actually got a prototype. Like, you know how many months and probably years of planning it takes to get to that point? So yeah, the guy is insane, but insane in, like, you know, they say all geniuses are insane in their own way. I'm not calling him a genius, but he is a very sharp guy. And he has very clearly thought out all of this stuff. And I'm with you, by the way. I don't know if this Melo thing is going to work, but I probably wouldn't have pulled him out of school. But you know what? I do find it funny, however, that I used this analogy the other day. You know, a few weeks ago, the U.S. lost in the World Cup qualifiers, and the United States isn't going to the World Cup in soccer, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, all these people come out and say, we need a better youth system. We need to go to the European model. Well, what does the European model do? It freaking pulls kids out of school and makes them focus on soccer 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and they get homeschooled. That's exactly what LaVar Ball just did, and you want that for our soccer system, but because it's basketball and because nobody's ever done it before, he's an idiot, he's a bad dad, he's all this, he's all that. So it's just funny, like, how all of these narratives they're just
fun as a negative.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't agree with everything he's done. I don't agree with everything that he said. But I always say it like this. For the people that hate LaVar Ball, like, what has he really done that's that bad? Like there's only two things that he's done that really I would say, like, I'm just don't think are good looks. Like, he said that you can never win a championship with three white players, which is a direct shot at Lonzo's teammates. I didn't like that. And he went after that female ref and
Daniel Lane.
Yeah.
Well, even that, he had a history with Leahy. Like, yeah, it's not the best comment, but yeah, I don't want to get too much into that because it's – but they have a history. So it's at least
– exactly.
I can understand – I'm not agreeing with him, but I can understand where he's coming from on that one.
But again, he can like, in a way, I hate to do this, but he can kind of get away with it because he is married to a white woman. You know, so he's clearly not racist. It was just right. Kind of a shot at the teammates.
It was more. As far as the teammates are concerned, yeah. Like, correct. And I don't even think he really meant it like that. I think he just meant that, you know, in his own way, like, these guys aren't good enough to play with my son. And like, if you watch that team, like, Isaac Hamilton wasn't a great athlete. Like, there were other guys that weren't great athletes. I don't know. But the point is that everyone that just rants and raves about all these terrible things that he's done, like, anyone who's watched the show, as you know, loving father, loving husband, loud mouth. But you know what? We all three of us have been around basketball enough to know there's a lot of parents that are loudmouths. Yeah, there are a lot of parents that are loudmouths. There are a lot of parents that think their sons are better than they are. The only difference is this guy has a camera in front of his face and the rest of them don't.
Right. So, all right, I want to get this back to the SEC.
I love that, though. I'm sorry.
No, that was great. But to get back to the SEC, and you know, we'll kind of stick with that in terms of being talked about enough? What team in this conference is the opposite of LeVar Ball? What team's not being talked about?
Oh, enough? That was a professional circle right there. I liked it. That was awesome. All right, so my team is Alabama. I think you'd actually make a case for Texas. Yeah, like you talk about Ball's life, all that stuff. Colin Sexton is freaking awesome.
He's my favorite player in the country this year.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and that's exactly what I was going to say, is that to me, although they are completely different players, and I hope everyone kind of understands this analogy, I think he is going to have a Lonzo Ball type impact on Alabama. They were already good, obviously probably better than UCLA was before Lonzo. But, you know, he's the kind of guy that he comes into your locker room, and even as a freshman, he's competitive. Nobody's going to outwork him. He's going to get in your face. He's going to play on both ends of the court. And it's funny because, you know, there was that big kind of viral video where him and Jalen Hands, who's actually now at UCLA, went at it actually at the Ball is Life All-American game. And it was funny because I was literally 5 feet away from that when it happened. Like, the game was in LA and it was at a practice, and I was at practice. And I was like, this guy's a bulldog. And he was in Jalen Hands' head the rest of the night. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it. So I'm saying this to say, like, he's just a monster. He's going to elevate everybody else's game. And, oh, by the way, they have another good freshman named John Petty and a bunch of really good returnees. So to me, I think that, assuming there's nothing NCAA related, because obviously everybody's investigating everything right now, right, that's the team to me that I just freaking love.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I had them at 19th in my top 25 that I put out. But I'm like, Colin Sexton's my favorite player, and it's not close in terms of favorite players in the country this year. Like, he plays pissed off for all 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's super athletic.
I love how hard he plays, dude. Like, I was watching them even like in a McDonald's All-American game. You know how a lot of those guys just kind of like jack off and, you know, do stupid shit. He was just out there balling. I was like, that's my kind of guy.
Yeah. That's how he plays every single night. And, you know, when it's such a, like, a cliche, like, hyperbolic thing to say, but it's like, dude, like, when your best player, like, plays like that every single night, it really does wear off on your team. I mean, I'm sure, Ben, you experienced that firsthand. You talk to coaches, they say the same thing. And, like, when Colin Sexton's coming to the gym and working that hard on both ends of the court, like, that's only going to be a good thing for a team that, by the way, already has a lot of vets and a lot of returning talent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think one of the most – and speaking of, like, you know, not talked about enough, what, Braxton Key? He's a guy that just, like – that's a big get back for him, like, or for Alabama. Like, one of those guys that – a team needs to be successful. Like, you could have Petty and Sexton, but you need the keys. You need what? Riley Norris is still there. I think, right? He was a junior last year. You need guys like that to be on your team for this to be successful. That's what Alabama has. Plus, like you mentioned, they have a coach who is one of the, you know, 60 best coaches in America.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean,
right. Yeah.
Like, so, yeah.
You know, it's like that. So
I also, by the way, if you guys want some recruiting news, I mean, this is not SEC, but it's Wisconsin. Wisconsin just got some bad breaking news. Tyler Hero, who's like 35th nationally, he's playing the USA team. He decommitted from Wisconsin.
Just now.
Just now.
Huh.
Yeah. Getting lots of texts.
FBI's coming after Wisconsin.
The dirtiest program in America.
He wanted out of there.
The dirtiest program in America.
I could even get our equipment manager to give me gear. When we were Adidas.
Can't you just go get it? You're like, can't you just walk into the office and get something?
You can. The thing that he was most stingy was socks. maybe he's like the guy in Mr. Deeds. He just got a sock fetish or something.
All right, with the SEC, with Alabama, that's obviously the team that you're not talking about. Do you think they're the most intriguing team in the conference too, or is there another team that you are and intriguing can be you can take it any way you want in terms of low, you know, high ceiling, low floor. You don't know what to make of them.
Well, intriguing to me, I want to jump in on this. I'm Missouri, because Missouri, at the end of the day, they finished 2-16 last year. Like, I know it's pretty much like starting over, but there's no history of doing this. Like, Kentucky has a history of doing this. So I'm just on a little bit of the skeptical side right now. Obviously, Michael Porter Jr. that into like a winning culture. It's two different things to have he's proven this system and Calipari knows how to do this. I'm just intrigued. Don't really know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, and I would add on Missouri too is that even though individually there's a lot of good players in the class, like I don't know that they all necessarily fit well together. You know, like Porter is basically, I'm sure everyone's seen him at this point, but he's a big four. You know, he obviously can play on the perimeter, can play down low. But then, you know, his younger brother, is much more of kind of a quote unquote traditional low post player. And their other top recruit, Jeremiah Tillman, is pretty much a similar player as well. And so I definitely think, you know, one, for lack of experience, two, really, for lack of a better term, lack of actual kind of tangible talent in the upper classes is that there's also just this issue of getting everyone to blend together. I mean, that's an issue at every program in America. But I'll add that, like, it feels like a bigger issue at Missouri because the puzzle pieces don't necessarily fit as well as they do at other places as well. So that's not to say they can't get it together. That's not to say Michael Porter Jr. can't be awesome, but that's just kind of another variable that, like, you just look at the individual pieces and say, oh, these guys are awesome, and they are, but how do they all fit together?
Yeah, I really question their backcourt. Like, they have a ton of depth in the front court. I don't know how that backcourt's going to be, and I've said it multiple times that, to me, if the most important position in college basketball is your lead guard.
Your point guard, easily.
Yeah, you, in college basketball, you need a guard to be successful. Like, go look at teams that win, and it's, you know, Joel Berry. It is, you know, Archie Dacno the year before that as Villanova's lead guard. It's, you know,
I mean, even like
Williams, Goss was awesome last year.
Yeah, I mean, and you look even
Marcus Page the year before.
Yeah, right. So it's you need that lead guard. I don't know who can be that. Now, obviously, there are some aberrations, like when you look at Kentucky's championship team. But when you have like an Anthony Davis Jr. and a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Anthony Davis and that group, I think that's a little different than a team like Missouri, who, yeah, Michael Porter is really good, but what else do they kind of have to mix and match with that team?
Well, and I was going to say, too, you just brought up the interesting point of, like, if you look at that 2012 Kentucky team, and again, you know, having written a book about Kentucky, I have way too much, like, weird knowledge about that program. But it's like, you know, there were, you know, at least a couple guys in that program at that point who had been there together for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And obviously, like, there are veterans at Missouri, but, like, you know, let's be perfectly blunt here. Like, Quanzo ran off a lot of guys when he got there. And, like, that's part of the nature of this beast. It's part of how it works. But really, kind of outside of Terrence Phillips, who I know that they like, who's a guard, there's not a lot of guys who played a ton of minutes last year. And even the ones that did, they're obviously going to be in much different roles than they were a year ago. So that's kind of the intriguing thing to me is, you know, you could really analogize pretty well that 2010 Kentucky team where you have just a bunch of, you know, new guys that are awesome, a bunch of older guys that all have to adjust their roles, even in like 2012 with Kentucky or really 2015 with Duke, whatever you want to say. Yeah, there were talented freshmen, but there were kind of upperclassmen who kind of knew how to deal with all that stuff. And it's not to say that Missouri can't get better over time or they won't get better, but they got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of just like behind the scenes stuff that has to get figured out, let alone, you know, the other stuff as far as actual X's and O's basketball stuff.
Right. Not only that, but you mentioned like Duke had Quinn Cook, Kentucky had Darius Miller. They saw wins. Like they were coming from teams that were successful.
Yep.
It's not like, you know, they're not coming from, like Ben said, a 2-16, you know, SEC team. And granted, Missouri was a lot more competitive last year than years past and started to at least play close games, but they're still not coming from a program that knows how to win. That's just a blunt way to look at it. So, yeah, you know, I'm interested to see Mississippi State. I think that's a team that I know Nick Weatherspoon came out yesterday, 2 days ago, that he's out. He's going to miss some time. But Ben Howland has tried a little bit of everything with them. Like, try to get, you know, he had Malik Newman, try to get, you know, try getting that one and done type player. Didn't work out. They were more competitive last year, but still not what I think people kind of expected Mississippi State to be with Ben Howland. Can they finally start to get toward an NCAA tournament team or, you know, win a couple games that they shouldn't, something like that? Because, you know, Howland can still coach and he's recruiting well down there, but at some point it's just a name and you need to win.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, as you said, Riggs, like at the beginning of this whole thing, and again, dating back to the springtime, I was high on the SEC and I kind of really talked about all the teams that I kind of felt like could be in the mix for an NCAA tournament bid. And it was some of the obvious ones, you know, Florida, Kentucky, Vandy, you know, some of the non-obvious ones. I think Arkansas could be pretty good this year, yeah. Schools like that. And, you know, I actually I have a buddy who follows me on Twitter who is really, let's just say, really plugged in down there. He's not a coach, but really plugged into that program. He's, you know, really close to some of the players. And he told me point blank, he's like, dude, Mississippi State is making the tournament this year. Now, admittedly, that was before this injury and you know, they had some transfers and stuff in the offseason. But like they like I know that they expect to be in that tournament conversation. But again, it's just one. First of all, you know, the craziest thing about the SEC this year is that there's just no guaranteed wins. I mean, that I think is going to be the most interesting thing is if you have three, four teams that all have kind of similar resumes towards the end of the year, how do you piece that together? Because I think that there are going to be a lot of teams on that bubble because you don't have the bottom feeders at the league like you in the league like you do in other leagues, right? Where you can just say, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just trying to think of an example. When in the ACC, if you have Pitt on your schedule, that's a win. Like, yeah. You
know,
like
they don't get to play like, the ball.
Yeah, there's no DePaul, and it's weird to think because usually the SEC has a bunch of those teams. But I mean, I look at the bottom
state, or at least lately.
It's usually, yeah. And I was gonna say, like, I look at what I consider to be the bottom of this league, and like somebody like Georgia, who I know you love, you know, Yante Mayton, Reeves, and like, you know, that's a guy that's gonna play in the NBA, and Georgia might be the 10th, 11th, 12th best team in this conference. You know, Ole Miss has guys. I don't know how good they're gonna be. Tennessee has guys, so that's going to be an interesting thing.
You better believe, like, that Ayante Mayton, like, is going to get a home game against one of the better teams. And they're, you know, like a Missouri. Say Missouri just cracks the top 25. They may be young, come into Georgia, and Georgia historically always gets like one home win against the top team in the SEC. Like, and that happens all across
they
the bottom to the mid bottom. It's always like that.
Over time.
It's always like that. So I see what you're saying. Just wanted to add on to it.
So you mentioned, no, you know, you started counting NCAA tournament teams. How many realistic do you think there are this year?
I truly believe this. I believe half of this league make it. Seven teams. I think some of them are pretty obvious. I think, you know, Kentucky, Florida, A&M, Texas A&M, we haven't even talked about, is going to be awesome. Who else am I missing here? I think Arkansas is going to be there. They return two other top three scorers of a great recruiting class coming in. But then, you know, but the point I'm trying to make is that then there's those teams that are on the fringe. And I think there's three or four of those teams that could be battling for six, seven, eight, you know, those spots right there. We haven't talked about Auburn. Auburn is awesome. They're going to have, you know, arguably, you know, as far as a rotation of a top six, top seven, top eight guys, they're as good as just about anybody not named Kentucky, Florida, A&M. You know, they're probably the third or fourth most talented team in this league. So you got an Auburn, you got a Mississippi State, you got an Arkansas, who I mentioned. So to me, what I just think is so interesting about this league is kind of the two things that we talked about. One, who is able to pick up those kind of big road wins and win the games, you know, that where everything's not going their way, because there just aren't a lot of easy wins to be had. And then in the second vein, like, who takes care of business out of conference? And I think that's such an underrated part of this, is that, you know, outside of Kentucky and Florida and maybe Vandy, like, a lot of these schools don't get the marquee out of conference games. And part of it is scheduling. Like, they just don't want to play in North Carolina because they feel like historically they'll lose that game. But it's also because there's no value for like a North Carolina in that situation. And so I'm just saying it to say that a lot of these teams, there really is no wiggle room in the out of conference, which is going to be something to watch out about as well. Like, as I said, you know, I have a guy that's pretty plugged in at Mississippi State, and he said, look, I love our talent, but the biggest thing we got to worry about is we got to basically go undefeated in the out of conference play because we don't have any games that we can afford to lose, especially knowing how good the SEC is. So to me, I kind of dodge your. Considering, you know, historically that's a great number for the SEC, I truly believe it's going to be so important, one, to win those games that you got to win, and then two, to take care of business out of conference, because this isn't a league where, you know, that history says that you're going to be able, if you start, you know, if you have a couple ugly wins out of conference, that you're going to get the benefit of the doubt later in time.
All right, so let's move on to projections. We've been doing this for every conference, and it's pretty simple. Player of the year, coach of the year, freshman of the year, first team, all conference, five players. You don't have to – it can be all five guards. It can be five bigs, just the five. So who do you have, Aaron, for player of the year?
Wow, just throwing this at me just like this, huh? Yep. I will go – I'm trying to just really quick eyeball it. I'll say Robert Williams. I don't feel great about that because, like, as a low post player, he can't kind of create his own offense. I'll say Robert Williams just because he's awesome. I don't feel great about that. You know what? No, screw it. I'm going to go with our boy Yante Maton that we just discussed. Not a great team, but he's going to put up stats. Yeah, and everybody knows he's good too. Like, he's one of those guys that, like, even if the team finishes 500, the coaches will be like, "That guy's awesome." Like, yeah, I'm gonna go Yante Maton, player of the year.
Yeah, because he put 18-7 last year, and he's gonna have. I mean, he's just gonna get more touches this year, especially without JJ Frazier there. What about you, Ben? Who are you going with Maton, Williams, or Porter, or someone else?
I was going to go Porter, but I also was going to, like, how do leagues traditionally do this? Like, if Porter is player of the year, is he also, like, then automatically freshman of the year, or, like, would that go to Colin Sexton? Or, like, you know what I mean? Or is it just both?
I think you can do both. I'm trying to think, did Davis win both when he was there?
I'll have to look that one up, but just didn't know if you guys knew off the top of your head.
I don't.
I was going to go with Porter. And then for sake of argument, so let's just say I can pick a different freshman of the year. Obviously, I'm going to go with Sexton.
Yeah, for sure. It's Sexton. I went with Sexton over Porter just because I think Sexton's that good. And I think Porter is a better player, but I think Sexton's going to put up the better numbers, especially he just has more help around him, I think. And I like the fit at Alabama more.
Yeah, Sexton too, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was just going to say I'm going to go Sexton too, because I think an important part is that while guys like the three of us are doing our best to hype Alabama this year, I think that for the average fan, when they look up in like mid-February and Alabama's ranked like 16th in the country, they're going to be like, wow, like, where did this come? Oh, they have this really awesome freshman.
Nick Saban is recruiting basketball.
Oh my God, the cliches are going to be so bad this winter. And I was going to say too, like, yeah. And the other thing is with Porter is like that team, as we've discussed, could underachieve independent of whether he's great or not. And I think, unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast that could be held against him as well. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's why I would pick Sexton as the league freshman of the year.
And then who do you guys got for coach of the year?
Me first?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I'm going to go Avery Johnson. I think Billy Kennedy, you can make a really strong case for, because I think they might actually win the regular season, but I could see a scenario where Alabama finishes as high as third or fourth. I'll say Avery Johnson. I'm kind of waffling because I'm thinking about it. I'll say Avery Johnson. I think Billy Kennedy, you can make a pretty strong case for it too.
I was going to say Avery Johnson, but I'll go a little bit different. I'll go Mike White. I think Florida's going to be really good this year. I think what he can do with guards, I think Kayvon Allen and Chris Chioza are going to have just two really good years. And he gets John Ogbonu back in the second semester, I believe.
How dare you say he who must not be named?
Chioza, yeah.
Chioza.
But I'll go Mike White just because of going different of Avery Johnson.
Yeah, going different than Avery. I was just going to try and maybe go like – I think a coach that has a good opportunity to win it is definitely Kunzo. I mean, if you look at the record last year, if he's able to at least finish in the top three, I think you can make a strong case for taking a program from 2-16 to the top three would get you coach of the year.
All right, so Aaron, who do you have – let's say who are your top five teams in the conference in order?
All right, top five teams. I'm going to actually go with a little bit of an upset. I think A&M will win the regular season.
Okay.
I think Kentucky will probably go deeper in the tournament, but it's what you said, Riggs, as far as like there's just going to be nights where all those freshmen at Kentucky have no idea what they're walking into right. In some random road environment, and they'll just lose games in January that they wouldn't lose if it was a month later. So I'll go So A&M to win the league in the regular season, Kentucky number two, Florida number three, Alabama number four. I'll tell you what, I'll throw a little curveball out there. I will say Auburn number five because I think wow. They're crazy. They're crazy talented. They return like 86% of their scoring, and it's just a matter of them putting it together. I'm going to pray – much like Bruce Pearl, that there's nothing else that comes out of this FBI case.
That's a big thing.
yeah, I guess that's really probably something I should have considered when I put Auburn five. But that's funny because I've never thought of them really as one of those teams during the off season. But the more I look at how much they return, the fact that they got a summer tour this year, I will go ahead and put Auburn in at number five.
All right, Ben, who do you have for your top five?
As you know me, Riggs, like I am a stick with your guns until like they don't work. So I'm going Kentucky number one until Coach Cal gives me a reason not to put them there. I'm buying Alabama. I'm putting Mizzou top three. Florida goes to four and five. I'm on the fence with right now. Because I think like you literally could make a case for a lot of teams in this position. But I'll go Arkansas.
All right.
So yeah, my Hogs. Woo, pig.
I'm gonna go Kentucky one just because, Aaron, you kind of mentioned it of, those freshmen are going to walk in and not knowing what to expect. Well, I kind of feel that way about the conference outside of Florida because this like a lot of the players just haven't been, the big games on the road outside of Kentucky. Like how many times do you see, Vandy get hyped up when A&M rolls into town or something like
sure.
that. Or so I'll go Kentucky one. I'll go Florida two just because I love what Mike White can do down there. I'm going Alabama three. I'm going to go A&M four, and I'll go Missouri five. So we'll end on this. Who is going to be the worst team in the conference? Because there's a lot of interchangeable guys in the middle, I feel like.
Say that again, Riggs. You cut out, bud.
I said, who do you think is going to be the worst team in the conference? Because I think there's going to be the middle of that group, the middle of this conference is very interchangeable.
Worst team?
Yeah. Who finishes last?
I'd probably say LSU. They're so young. But dude, first of all, this tells you how good this league is because one, the three of us just had completely different top fives. And I think you could make a case for everything. And by the way, LSU signed a McDonald's All-American in their class and they have two or three pretty good upperclassmen returning. And I think that speaks to how good this league is that a team like LSU could finish in last, but I will probably go LSU, rounding out the bottom at number 14.
Yeah, that's who I have too. Same type of reasons as you. Like, I like LSU 2 years from now, but they're going to have – and I like Will Wade, but they're just going to have – like, somebody has to finish last. It's essentially what it comes down to. Somebody has to finish last. Ben, what about you?
I mean, I have LSU as you guys. I mean, I look at every other team and I can make a case that they're going to win, you know, like a big home game or at least be somewhat competitive. Cause it's just, there's a lot of parity from, I think like you can almost make a case like there's two tiers. Like there's, UK, Florida, Alabama, Missouri, I think we would all say is tier one. And then from then on, like, let's play some craps and see what happens.
All right. Well, Aaron, thanks a lot for coming on, man. We'll let you get out of here. Where can everyone find you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I appreciate you guys having me. Hope we get to do it again during the season. Appreciate it. Well, I appreciate Torres, AARONTORRES, are doing stuff for the Athletic, which is obviously Seth Davis's new site. So it's amazing how fast the season has come. It's amazing, by the way. It didn't feel like there was an off season at all between coaching changes, recruiting, transfers, FBI, Rick Pitino. like there was no off season, but I'm excited. The game's about to start. It's going to be a funny year.
Yeah, everyone, go ahead, follow Aaron, and thanks again for coming on, man. All right, so that was our interview with Aaron Torres. Again, big thanks for him for coming on. And now, something that we kind of slapped together and had some big-time feedback on was a college basketball fantasy league. I participate in one already with some friends, and it's run on Fantrax, which is where we're going to run this one. So the way we set this up is if you follow the show on Twitter – you subscribed on iTunes or whatever podcast app you listen to and left a review, you are entered into the drawing. There are 9 open spots because we added one special person to the group. That's our guy Sam Vicini, who is a major reason as to why we're where we are in the podcast. So Ben, myself, and Vicini are 3 of the 12 entries, and we have 9 winners, and how we came up with the winners is I put everybody into an Excel sheet, and then I just did a random Google number generator from 2 to 30. If your number came up, you were entered, and then it just kept going down the list to fill out. So that's kind of how it happened. So there are 9 open spots. So the winners, and I'm going to read their Twitter handles because that's what I have. So the first winner is Bergstein24. Second person in the fantasy league, which we need a name for, so somebody can come up with that, is the Ben Guerin 18. After that, we have TJ Hoft 14. And then we have Big Bad Brooks. We have J_131. We have Badger Sports 1. We have Jay Schroeder, 011. We have Play It Cool. And we have Corey J. Pear T. Again.
I can't wait for the people who just got selected to like be like, you didn't say any of ours right. Yeah, I hope all 9 of them say, Reegs, you can't read.
Yeah, well, all right, you read them then.
Well, I mean, you got Bergstein 24. It could be Bergstein.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
The Ben Guerin.
Yeah.
TJ Hoeft. Big Bad Brooks.
Yeah, you can't.
J_Coop. You didn't say Coop on that one.
What did I say?
J_131.
You know who I'm talking about.
Skip the Coop. Badger Sports 1. I like that guy. Jay Schroeder can't. Play It Cool with the K was good. Corey J. Parrot.
Parrot.
Yeah, it's actually kind of.
Yeah, so those 9 are going to be entered into the Fantasy League. Again, we can't thank everybody enough for helping out with reviews and being entered. It's something we plan on doing going forward. I think in season, what Ben and I have talked about doing is maybe once a month doing some sort of contest, whether it's a pick 20 games straight up and wait, you know, put a point system next to it, pick 15 games against the spread and put a point system next to it. So we'll be doing things throughout the year. If you had already submitted for this and didn't get picked, we'll find a way for you to be in the next one. You know, we're not going to screw you, something like that. So Just keep that in mind if you're listening. If you are one of the nine selected, shoot a DM to the show Twitter page. I'm going to set up the fantasy page, and I'm going to need everyone's email address and things like that to get it going and find out a date for that works for the draft. If you are listening, you don't know what we're talking about. It is going to be a 12-team college basketball fantasy where it's going to be the players are going to be from the six major conferences, the AAC, and the A10, I think we're going to go with. I don't think you can select individual teams. Like, I don't think you can just throw in Gonzaga or St. Mary's. Obviously, everyone's kind of Midwest or East Coast. So that's why we're doing those. And the winner will have a, you know, the monetary win and perhaps a quick interview on the show. We'll keep people updated. I think that it'll be an interesting way to, you know, kind of look at the season in a different way. So, again, if you're one of the nine, put it out. We'll put it out on Twitter too, but this shows you at least listen to the entire show the entire time. Ben, anything else?
Negative. I'm still weird day, weird day in basketball so far with Bobby Portis punching, Nikola Mirotic in the face, Gordon Hayward, Silver. I mean, who knows what's going to happen the rest of this game? I don't even know what the score is.
Rick Pitino suing.
Adidas. Like, it's literally going to be like this from here until we're going to have 1 week in the summer. We're going to be like, is this finally a week where we don't have news? It's going to be like this the whole time. So let's just keep this thing, keep the train rolling. We're going to Queen City Exchange soon, working on some stuff and.
Yeah, and make sure.
So, follow us at Fundamentally D and
make sure you follow us on Instagram too. We need to get that going. So, Instagram, it's the same handle there, Fundamentally SD. We'll try to put some more stuff out on there. Until then, next week, we might have a guest already locked up.
We have a lot of potential guests. We'll see what comes to fruition.
Names that people know. So we're looking forward to it. Again, thanks for listening. And we will be back next week.